Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we get real low and deep and explore the world of thrash metal with the incredible bass players David Ellefson from Megadeth and Frank Bello from Anthrax. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by our good friends Sweetwater Musical Instruments at Pro Audio and Guitar Hummer at www.guitarhummer.com. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and the new proud papa, Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Hey, Scott, congratulations, Papa.
Yes, yes, I'm very excited to enjoy the world of fatherhood. So, it's been a bit crazy, but hey, you know, she's already learned her E chord, so that's good. So
that's good.
I mean, in the spirit of the show, you know, she's got to be able to...
Well, in honor to our guest tonight, I'm hoping that you will have her start on bass as soon as possible.
Yeah. And without her having the neck muscles that she needs, she's already a perfect headbanger.
There you go.
So, anyways. While I was gone, I did quite a bit of different stuff. I ended up posting up a pedal steel guitar demo from Quilter Amps, which they have a new
nice
amp coming out. And a bunch of the demos from 65 Amps and the BC Audio at the LA Amp Show. So post those up all on my YouTube channel at Selenium.
Yes, and there's also links on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Facebook page, so you can check them out. You can catch them there, too.
Yes,
they're pretty good.
Yeah, very, very, very cool. So what have you been up to, Jeff?
Been working on my guitars. I'm working on my Strat now, so that's the next one in my list of cleaning up and reconditioning. And so I've been going through that. I've had to do some repairs on some of the amps. The tubes are going out. It's the times like this I would like to have a 65 amp that doesn't wear the tubes out, you know.
Yeah.
But they're doing okay. I mean, I've just been working on that stuff. It's been keeping me pretty busy. And last week was a real interesting show with John Five. We had a good time. And also, too, we should be getting an update. Curious to see if John Five connected with Monique. And I want to thank Monique Caravello for being on the show and helping me while you were on your
absence. Yeah, thank her very much.
And she's supposed to be doing a purple version of one of the Marshall heads for John Five.
That will be very cool. Well, for those of you listening live right now, you can join us on our chat room, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com. And you can provide any questions or comments for our guests. And we will be taking callers as best as we can, 323-203-0815. Why don't we go ahead and play our first spot from Guitar Hummer and then the intro.
And then we'll be with our guests. Here we go.
There's a product out called Guitar Hummer that's designed to give you vintage sound without the vintage weight. We all know the more a guitar is played, the better the sound. Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that simulates play by sending gentle vibrations through your guitar as it sits. Swap your guitar stand for Guitar Hummer, and in just a few weeks, you will notice deeper, richer tone and improved sustain. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to guitarhummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Okay, here we go.
Shot in cold blood, no chance to fight. Stay
Everybody, welcome Mr. David Ellison from Megadeth.
Well, hey guys, how are you?
How you doing?
Thanks for being on the show.
So I don't know if you happen to, if you could tell over the phone there, but well, first of all, those are all from the Countdown to Extinction album. But the very last song is from what I think is a masterpiece, the Symphony of Destruction song, but I mixed it with your 20th anniversary live recording. So it goes from studio to live. So just for everybody listening, there is a new album out where they play the entire album straight through live in Pomona, California.
Cool.
So, but so Dave, tell us on that one of the songs there, I used also the Countdown to Extinction. In that one there, you were actually the co-writer of the lyrics. How does that work in your guys' band? Where do you guys write the music first? Do you guys do the lyrics first? How does it normally work?
It can go any couple of ways, to be honest with you. Sometimes you write the music, you know, a song, and the musical parts of it comes together, and then you look over it and you go, okay, you know, who has some lyrics, who has some ideas? Sometimes an idea sort of just inspired straight out of the music, you know, so the two come together at the same time. And then other times you'll have a lyric, more probably on Euthanasia record. I had some lyrics that I brought in, and they work really good over music, songs like I Thought I Knew It All and things like that. But like, you go back to the Countdown record, for instance, like Foreclosure of a Dream, that was a song that right after we did the Peace Sells record, I actually brought Dave back to the farm where I grew up in Minnesota, and we were sitting there one night watching TV, and this thing came on about It said something like that, Foreclosure of the Dream, or something to that effect. And we both looked at each other and went, "Well, that's a great title." And so it had been sitting around for a few years. And when that music, Dave, it's funny, we were in St. Paul, Minnesota, backstage on the Judas Priest tour, which would have been Rust in Peace for us. And Dave picked his guitar up, and that music came out of him. And we started to compose the music to that tune, and then it wasn't too much longer, a couple months after that, when, you know, he goes, you know, that Foreclosure of a Dream idea that we had, I think maybe that would go really good with this. Do you want to work on some lyrics? So that's where that all came together. So sometimes you'll have an idea and it'll sit around for years before we actually use it. So many, many different ways, you know, kind of like a song is like broth. It's ready when it's ready.
Now, since this show is all about tone, for that particular album, how did you record your bass? Did you record it directly, or did you record and mic the cabinet at the time?
You know, that record was interesting because I was using the earlier Jackson basses, both four and I had one five-string bass, and that black one you see in a lot of the pictures from back in the day. And the Rust in Peace record, we recorded analog, so I got about as much top end as I could on it. I mean, that was the Jackson basses into the Galleon Kruger 800 RB heads into Harkey, I believe, a 410 and single 15 cabinets. By the time we got to the Countdown record, we started to record on the Sony 48-track digital tape. And we recorded at the Enterprise Studios over in North Hollywood, so that was an SSL console into that tape. That probably has as much to do with the tone of that record as anything. But as far as the bass rig goes, I used the same Jackson basses into that GK 800 RB, into at that point only a pair of Harkey 410 cabinets. You stack them up so they couple together and you get a nice, you know, couple effect sitting on a wooden floor in the studio. So we used close miking. I think we maybe even used a little bit of distant miking on that as well, and I don't remember what the mics were. So we used mics on the cabinets, and we also used the DI straight off the bass into the SSL that printed straight to tape. So between the DI from the bass and the miking on the cabinets, we had a blend of signal that we could blend together for in the mixing. And of course, when you're on 48-track digital, that's quite a few channels. So it's nice to be able to have those different tracks and those different channels available that we could combine when it came mix time. There's obviously a lot of top end on it. Those basses didn't have a ton of bottom end, but there was just the Jackson proprietary pickups and electronics that they had, and I like that sound. Jackson actually made really good pickups back in those days that were their own. They had their own electronics, and I forgot, it was only three knobs, so I believe it was a volume, treble, and bass, and then it had a selector switch you could select if you wanted front pickup, which for me was a P-bass pickup, or the rear pickup, which is a J, or you could blend the two together. But it definitely had a lot of points. It had a lot of top end on it. We used to call my tone the knife because it cut right through everything.
Well, sometimes that's exactly what you want. Now, you mentioned Harkey. We definitely want to thank the good folks over at Harkey for bringing you on and bringing Frank Bello on, who'll be on later on the show. So thank them. Definitely thank them for getting you guys on. Now your current equipment you use, according to their site, is you use their 8x10 cabinet. What's made you go with that version now rather than having like a mix of 15-inch and 10s?
Well, I used a bunch of different stuff over the years. I used the Harkey stuff up through the Countdown to Extinction Tour, so up into 1993. By 1994, the tone of the band was changing a little bit. The songs were, I guess, tempo-wise slowing down a little bit. Some of the tones got a little bigger and wider. The Jackson Harkey combination at that time didn't totally serve the development of the sound, so I moved over and did a few different amplifiers and some different basses as well. But when I came back to Megadeth in 2010, and we were getting ready to go do the 20th anniversary Rust in Peace record, for that record, I really wanted to have everything really that sounded like that album. And we got the original backdrop from this girl that bought it from us in an auction that we did at Megadeth.com. She lived up in Hollywood, and David stayed in touch with her, so we got that original backdrop. I wanted, like, you know, the skinny jeans, the sweat, the wristband, the whole nine, you know. I really wanted that.
The Aquanet.
I wanted the fans to have the exact experience that they had back in the day, and the new fans that had never gotten to see that to really go down memory lane. And of course, you know, it's not 1990 anymore. It's 2010, so, you know, tones had developed, and equipment was different and better than it was back in those days. So, you know, you get the advantage of using the latest greatest. So what I did is I went to Jackson, and which is now owned by Fender. And the cool thing about that is they can make all of their instruments at the Corona, California Fender Custom Shop, which is probably the best custom shop in the world. And some of the finest luthiers and the business work there. And actually, the guy who used to make my old original Jackson basses, Mike Shannon, when Fender bought the Jackson brand, they brought Mike Shannon over with them. So he knew exactly how my basses were made back in the day, because he made them. So we upgraded. It's all alder bodies, neck through, maple neck through with alder wings. We used some ebony fingerboards on them, and put in the EMG soap bar electronics with the EMG active circuitry. So I'd like to think a much meatier, beefier, modern-day tone off the instrument. And then we went into the Harkey. I tried a whole bunch of different amplifiers. I mean, I brought a ton of stuff down. And the Harkey stuff just hands down was the winner. It sounded suddenly, you know, it's funny how I tried some amps and it sounded, the tone was good, but it sounded like I was sitting 10 feet away from the band. And then when I brought the Harkeys in, suddenly I sounded like I was right inside the kick. You know, it really brought my playing right inside the band. So to me, that was the Harkey, LH1000 heads and the high drive A10 cabinets was really the perfect mix. And the thing that's cool about those high drive cabinets is back in the day, Harkey used to only have aluminum cone speakers, these high drive cabinets are a combination of aluminum column and paper. So it allowed me to not only replicate the really precise aluminum comb attack of the rest of the piece record, but it also allowed me to get those nice, big, warm, wider, fatter tones that we were getting on, say, like the Cryptic Writings record and some of the stuff that we did after Rest in Peace.
David, when you go into the studio now, do you just tend to bring the Hartke amps, or do you bring a slew of other amps to experiment?
You know what, the first record that I did back after that Rest in Peace tour was the 13 album, and then we've now since done the Super Collider record, and the amplifier setup was almost identical for both of those records. Straight into the head, right into the 1810 high drive cabinet, we use a fire mic direct on the cabinet. I think we used an AKG close mic, And I don't know that we did any distant miking on that, but and then we also took the DI straight off the head. The only thing we added, the 13 record was a little bit more kind of high tech sound, active electronics and things like that. The Super Collider record, for some reason, kind of called out for more straight ahead vintage rock tones. It was a less metal sounding record, as far as it having all this really high top end, and it just seemed more organic, so I ended up, believe it or not, I ended up using my Jackson signature bass, which is the import model, the inexpensive model. We just pulled it straight out of the box as it shipped to us from India and opened it up and plugged it in and started cutting tracks with it. So in fact, it wasn't until we were a couple of tunes in and they started playing up the neck, I realized the thing hadn't been intonated, no one set it up, and so I was like, okay, let's stop for a minute, I gotta intonate this thing and get it set up. That through the amp was great. And the one thing we did add is Hartke makes the, what they call the attack pedal. Mm-hmm. And, I don't use it live because my bass is wide open, so we got a lot of gain from those pickups hitting. I now use the kilo bass heads, and so you're hitting another preamp, and then of course you're pushing all that signal into the A10 cabinet. So from the signal upon signal upon signal, you're really pushing everything to the limit. So the attack pedal I don't use live, but in the studio, what it did for me is it allowed me to dial up a kind of like a nice vintage dirty SVT tone, mm-hmm. while yet retaining a nice, thick, warm, traditional bass sound that you want to get off the cabinet. Lots of times when you hit you put a distortion pedal in the link, the first thing that happens is all the bottom end goes away.
Right.
This attack pedal retained the natural sound of the amp and the bass, yet added this kind of fuzzy SVT thing to the mix. And then it also added a nice, you could kind of get that sub woofer, that kind of one octave lower type of thing that you get like off the old DBX units. Of course, a lot of those DBX units, or any of those type of units, when you start adding an octave lower, it adds this nice sub sort of sound to the bass track. The trick is the faster you start playing, those units usually don't track very well. Mm-hmm. they if you're playing slow whole notes and half notes, they kind of are able to follow the signal and track and add that octave lower, but when you start really ripping and playing fast like we do at Megadeth, you lose that. So this attack pedal kind of gave me the best of both worlds. Added some of that nice warm bottom end with real accuracy, and it added that fuzzy stuff up on the top, so I got this nice grindy vintage really fat warm tone on the record.
Well, with your bright sound live, how do you get that low end? I know a lot of guys were using that that sub-octave box like DBX, and they would, especially like, for example, like Chris Squire, I think he used one to get it really deep, and then he used like 18s or something to get that, to really throw that low frequency. What do you do to get it? Because your sound is pretty bright. How do you get the low end? Do you use a second amp and just dial it up?
I don't. I tried as a kid. It's funny that when I was a teenager, you know, growing up back in the farm in Minnesota, and I had my bands, I bought a PA system, so I was getting into the whole bi-amp and tri-amp thing, and really understanding how that worked, crossovers and all that kind of stuff. And I would see guys with these bi-amp and tri-amp bass rigs and stuff, so I started using it, and it's funny, as much as it's really hi-fi sounding, and it sounds like your stereo, as soon as you get that kind of a rig into the band, especially a metal band, you just disappear immediately. The bass just goes away. So I started to appreciate, you know, kind of the 810 cabinet design, which is, you know, the smaller speakers, they punch really good. When you put 8 10-inch speakers, I mean, that's technically 80 square inches of speaker blasting at you, and you consolidate them into one cabinet, you know, you're getting a lot of speaker, you know, square inches of speaker space hitting you. And, you know, even a pair of 15s is only 30 inches.
Right.
And you get four 12-inch speakers in a cabinet, it's only 48 inches. So when you think about the 810 thing, you've got 80 inches. And it's really, when you start pairing up two next to each other, which is what I use live, that's a lot of thrust of bass coming in.
Yeah, you're moving a lot of air.
Yeah, and moving air is important if you want to feel bass. And I guess the biggest trick, so even live, I just do a DI, and I put a 57, just a Shure 57 on one of the speakers, and we found a nice sweet spot. Because you can move the 57 around the speaker in a whole bunch of different areas, and it's going to get different tone.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got it set up nice, where it really angles down at an angle from the top. And we can get the, you know, get the nice center of the tone of the cone if we want, or we can kind of move it slightly off and get, you know, more of the cone off the center of the speaker, off the voice coil as well.
Now, just want to change a little bit different direction. You have a book that just came out. I believe it.
Yeah.
It's My Life with Death.
Yes.
So, can you give us a little bit of a give our listeners a little bit of a snippet of what they might find in that book?
Sure. I mean, it's available everywhere. If you want to order it online, there's a link called MyLifeWithDeathBook.com. You can go to and buy it direct or buy it through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and those kind of things. So it's available everywhere. Yeah, you know, reading back over it, when I was doing the final edits and everything, the thing I was probably the happiest about is that it's really just the story of a kid who grew up on the farm in Minnesota, for whatever reason, heard rock and roll on the radio, fell in love with it. The bass guitar called out to me, and I picked it up with this just abundance of enthusiasm. I was just driven to be really good at it because I loved it. So I spent every minute I could with the instrument. And it wasn't just playing the bass, it was playing the bass so I could play songs and get bands with my buddies and go out and do basically what I do today. I've been doing that since I was like 11 and 12 years old. So, that's really the story. And of course, along the way is, you know, the trials and tribulations of being in bands and, the formation of in the early days of Megadeth for sure is well chronicled in it, so the readers will probably really enjoy that. A lot of good stories there, a lot of the early day stuff, you know. And you know, band members and some lineup changes and stuff that we had, and musical directions and different things that happened, and some music business stories in there for sure. You know, and then also, of course, you know, family. A lot of us musicians, you know, you grow up, you get a family, you get married, you have kids, and you know, I'm no different than anybody else who may be listening who's trying to juggle family and career and trying to play music and doing all these things together. It's not easy, you know, but, you know, when music calls out to you, like it does to probably all of us here, you know, doing this interview right now and the listeners too, it's something that it's hardwired in you and you have to go pursue it, either professionally, semi-professionally, or at least just even as a hobby. It's something that needs to come out of you. And I was happy that that certainly is the overarching theme of the book.
Now, you actually teach music classes or actually have some seminars on music, on the music business, correct?
I do bass clinics for Harkey. I do some on my own. Me and Frank Bello do some. We're actually doing one this weekend coming up at Bass Player Live in L.A.,
Then
we've got the Metal Masters thing that we do that Harkey sponsors as well. so I get out and I do quite a bit of that stuff. And I learned years ago, I've never been a guy who teaches. It's just I've never been a teacher. This wasn't my thing. But for one short period, I did give a few lessons here in Phoenix right after we recorded the Cryptic Writings record, because I took some lessons before we went down to Nashville and recorded, because I just wanted to kind of bone up on my chops. Some, in my opinion, some of the greatest bass players in the world live in Nashville. Their abilities far exceed what you hear lots of times on just country records, but they really are just fantastic musicians down there. And so I did some studying, we cut the record, I came back home, and I get some lessons for a few months in a music store, the bass place here in Phoenix, Arizona. And what it taught me is that in order to teach, you really got to know what you're doing, because you have to be able to explain it to somebody. And it really opened my eyes, and it made me really appreciate the art of teaching, you know. And just like not everybody can be a performer and a rock star, not everybody can be a teacher either. So it really helped me gain great respect for what teachers do.
I think we have Frank on the line. Frank?
Yeah, this is Frank calling in from cold New York.
Hey, Frank.
I know that that David has to leave pretty soon, and we appreciate David. He was mentioning that he had to leave. It's 25 after.
Yeah.
Yeah, Frank, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Hey, David, long time no speak. How have you been?
What up? Funny, me and Frank, this just goes to show what a couple of bass geeks we are. We're actually on FaceTime on our iPhones earlier tonight, running over parts, talking about songs, and getting ready for this weekend, and just, you know, we're guilty of too much bass. What can we say?
Yep. Well, for those of you listening before David takes off, just you can actually hear both David and Frank this Saturday. They're playing live at the Fonda Theater for the Bass Player Live, honoring Geezer Butler, Lee Rocker, and Tal Wickenfeld. And one of our other good friends and one of my favorite bass players, Billy Sheehan, is going to be there too. So it's going to be a heck of a bass extravaganza.
Really?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it should be fun. Yeah, Billy's a good friend of ours. I mean, you know what's funny? We have this bass player. There's a whole group of us right now. The hard key play is going on here. So we have this big group of friends just interacting a lot. We see each other quite a lot nowadays, which is cool.
It's very cool. Well, David, thank you very much. And for everybody listening, David also has a YouTube series called Rock Shop. You can find him on YouTube where he does all kinds of different little pick techniques and different bass recording techniques there on YouTube for everybody to check out. Thank you so much, David, for being on the show.
Thanks, you guys. Thank you, guys. I'll hand the baton over to Frank. Frank, rock him, knock him dead, buddy.
All righty.
I'll try. See you soon, David.
Thanks, David.
See you guys. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, so should we? Well, welcome everyone. Here's Frank Bello from Anthrax. We actually have a very cool intro for you. Actually, we'll play. Actually, we should play our spot first, our commercial spot.
All right, we'll go to commercial break, and then I'll go right into Frank's playing, and then we'll talk to him about it.
Hang with us, Frank.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk to you in a couple
so
minutes.
So hang on a second here.
Do you want to get the best possible tone from your acoustic instrument? Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that does more than just rest your guitar. It creates a gentle but continuous vibration that is equivalent to playing your instrument all day, every day. This concentrates years of seasoning into mere weeks, improving tone and sustain. You may not be able to afford a vintage guitar, but you now can achieve vintage sound. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to GuitarHummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. Also a huge fan of thrash metal, which is why I'm so excited today that Sweetwater and The Flow are bringing you Dave Ellefson, bassist for Megadeth, Frank Bello, bassist for Anthrax, and the president of Hartke Amps and Basses, Mr. Larry Hartke. The thing these three have in common, obviously, Hartke amplification. Rugged built, monster sounding, incredibly durable amplifiers that deliver punchy and thick tones, not only suited well for thrash, but also pretty much any kind of rock or metal you could think of. We've had the pleasure of having all of these gentlemen in at Sweetwater at one time or another for clinics and meetings. And they're all just excellent human beings, very knowledgeable and articulate, and they know their craft very well. I think they'll have a great show with you today. This is Aaron Raby from Sweetwater. Thanks again for having us.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Frank Bello from Anthrax.
Hey, Frank, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. You know what? I'm listening to those songs that you just played of my history here, and I'm noticing, it's funny, because I don't listen to a lot of the Anthrax songs throughout my career, and I'm noticing the bite. I'm so glad I've had this bite in my sound, this attack that I'm really proud of, and it leads us right into the Harkey thing about why I use them.
Yeah, I mean, when you hear those songs, I mean, you just stand out like crazy. I mean, you can just hear this, like, it almost sounds like your string is like just loose, but it's not. It's just, you know what I mean? I don't know how to describe it. It just sounds like it's just vibrating like the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's something that's always caught my ear. And again, it sounds like a Harkey commercial, but it's really not. This is why I believe in this company. It's a bite that my ear just lends itself to. It's a high end, sort of like a piano vibe. Compare it to like a piano, like top end that doesn't lose the bottom. And, it's still something I think I touch on a lot with my sound, but I never am satisfied. I keep it's the never-ending search. It really is that.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I just want to mention all the equipment that we're talking about is available over at our good friends at Sweetwater. So everything we're talking about, you can buy. You can get the stuff and try to get that sound. But Frank,
absolutely. So Sweetwater rules. I had a blast there, man. We had a great time when we did some stuff over there. We're just great people, just great knowledge, just a really wonderful experience.
I have a quick question for you, Frank. You were talking about that the especially the overtones you get in your bass sound. Have you ever recorded that with a piano, like a Steinway? And have you had issues with that?
You know, Here's the funny thing. You know, we have this Doug Pidnick, from great singer-songwriter, bass player extraordinaire from King's X, Tom Peterson and I, we had this little powwow about why we love this tone, why the piano is right there with that tone with bass. It's like Tom Peterson, Cheap Trick.
Mm-hmm.
The dude has this tone that I've loved since the beginning. A 12-string bass he started with. He actually told me a lot of the records that he played on was actually an 8-string and a 4-string that he just has the overtones on it. I've never tried it. I would love it. I would love to try that, just to follow the bass notes, just for the piano keys, just to hear that high-end frequency in the lower bass notes. I think that would be amazing. It would be fun to do. One thing to see, there's a long way to go yet, I hope. So I have a future.
Now, what are the Harkey amps and cabinets you use? I have here that you use the 810, also just like David.
The high drive. I use the high drives. I use an LH1000 head, which I love. And I'm telling you, and I'll tell you straight out with the 8x10 cab, with the high drive speakers, this thing is a tank. This sounds like a commercial to people, but I want people to know what's good and what works and what doesn't break down when you're on a two-year-long tour, that consistently, you know, when you walk on the stage, this thing does not go down. If anything, it was a plug one
yeah.
time. I think we were missing a plug. Somebody took the plug or whatever, the power cord. This thing just stays. And I could really highly recommend it because the tone is consistent every night. It's tight, it's biting, which I always look for, and it's powerful.
Well,
I can't say enough.
Well, I mean, for those of you that are out there that are bass players or, you know, new bass players, I mean, what more do you need here? You've got Frank Bello, you've got Billy Sheehan uses the LH1000, you use it, David Ellefson uses it. I mean,
And it's
and you guys all have fantastic tone.
If I'm correct, too, it's like the best of both worlds because it's the front end of it, the preamp section has tubes, and then the output's solid state. So it's got plenty of power, and it's plenty of clean power. If I'm correct,
I think what Hartke is doing with their amps, I think they're the new standard, and that's always been my line with Hartke when I first started out with them. David Ellison was one of the first people who made me try it when we were touring together, and he said just listen to this, and I tried it through his rig, and it just really blew me away. It really did, and I look forward to, because this company cares about bass. They're not just a company. They listen to players. I mean, I talk to the people that make them there, and they know bass, and they know tones, and they know what we want. And you really can't ask much more from a company.
Well, yeah, and actually, they're one of the few companies out there where you can actually go ask Larry Hartke himself a question about the amp. I mean, I think he's actually out in New York, right?
Larry's a great dude. Mark Menge is my buddy, and... he's the one that brought me in to Hartke, and he's a bass player. He's also a really good bass player. He brings me in, and we just start talking. He knew my history, and I got a quick history of him, and we just went off together, and it was just great. And he knows more of me than I know of me by my tone, which is kind of great. So I look forward to the next step with Hartke. Right now in my house, I have so many combo amps from Hartke, and these things just blow a lot of me away. It kind of freaks me out how loud and tight these things can be. So this company really knows what they're doing. So I'm looking forward to the next round, what they have coming.
So Frank, when hearing those clips, it just made me think of one thing I wanted to ask you. What would you tell people listening that are playing bass or learning to play bass? How do they learn to keep that kind of that thrash rhythm? And what practice technique should they do to be able to play like that and be able to keep it solid and keep up the stamina?
Well, you just said it right there. It really is about consistently playing and not to nauseam. It's really about... it's over and over until, like, I remember, I say these in my clinics, and I say this in my clinics, and how I started is building speed and endurance. Your left hand, your right hand. It's just I used to sit on my couch and whatever show. Say I'm aging myself here. I used to watch The Odd Couple, The Honeymooners, stuff like that. My favorite TV shows. I sit on my couch and just get my speed going with my fingers. 1 2 1 2 1 2. And consistently build it up. And before you know it, after weeks and months of doing this, just not even realizing I'm doing it, all of a sudden I was able to keep up with all the songs that I wanted to learn. And it really was that. And you build your strength and you build your speed, and on your left hand, your hand strength. And all of a sudden, it became a thing.
Dan, do you play
that's
with
how I learn.
Do you play with your pick or fingers?
I do both.
Really?
I really enjoy both, but if you ask me, my first love is my fingers. That's a lot of the players I grew up on is with fingers. So, Geezer Butler, Steve Harris, Geddy Lee, those are finger players. So I wanted to emulate them first off. So it was just obvious. But the pick has such a great tone. Tom Peterson, for God's sake, Chris Squire. There's so many great bass players with picks. Dave Ellison. There's just so many, it's a different tone to it that you can get a complete different thing out of.
Well, now, when you do use a pick, what kind of pick do you recommend for this type of music?
You know, I like the Dunlop's nylons. I like them. I like the give on them. They just work for me.
So you like them you like where they bend rather than a very stiff pick.
Yeah, what gauge are you using?
What did I use? Oh, God, was it 66? I forgot what it was. It, you know, there's a couple of them that work. It's weird you say that because there's a couple of them that work for different songs. You know what I mean? You just feel it. And there's not even a number on some of them. Not that I saw. But some of them it's a feel thing, you know. Is this going to work for this? You know, if you have to go really fast, speed-wise, I think I played this song Gung Ho years ago with a pick, and that was a nylon pick. And And I remember I kept changing in and out because what felt good, what didn't feel good. But it was definitely a nylon pick, but I'm more comfortable with that when I play.
Very cool. Now I'm going to ask you some similar questions I asked David. Okay, Among the Living album. That's I think a lot of people think that's one of your guys' best albums. I would definitely want to ask about how it was working with Eddie Kramer. But when you record those albums, how do you record them? Do you record them where you mic your cabinet, or are you doing direct, or are you doing a combination?
We do both. We do. I've always done both. In fact, actually, the first one, the first record that I played on, Spreading the Disease, before that, I went direct, and we re-amped it later on. We played it through the amp later on because I didn't know anything. I was very nervous. I was 18 years old. I was just scared stiff just being in a studio to begin with. And then I learned I learned what I needed to do on Among the Living, and we did both. And we had a direct thing going and the amp. And, you know, and as you get older and you get more knowledgeable, you just read up on things. You see what your players that you love, what they do. And you just grow like anything else. You just find out what they do. And now it's, God, now I just know if I don't get the tone immediately, I have to get the tone immediately. That's the first thing. There's no playing any song, not even starting a song, before you get the tone first, because nothing happens later. I'll tell that to the players out there. Nothing happens later. I don't care what dials they want to touch. Get your tone first. That's the truth, man.
Now, we have what I would say must be a very important question out of our chat room from Mark Hartke. He wants to ask. He was asking, "Why are you not writing your speech for the award presentation to Geezer on Saturday?"
Is that from Mark? Who? Mark Menge?
Mark Hartke.
Mark Hartke. Yeah, I'm sure. why am I not? Because here's why. I was just told about it tonight that I'm going to get a speech, and I'm actually working on Anthrax songs, which is I have a lot on my plate right now. We're writing an Anthrax record right now, so I was literally, before I called you, working on Anthrax songs, and because I get together with the boys after that this weekend, and we're going to continue writing the Anthrax record, so there's a lot to do. Big weekend.
Well, and was it a week or two ago you were just playing at Eddie Trunk's anniversary show, right, with Billy Sheehan and Portnoy and all those guys, right?
Yeah, and one of the highlights, and, you know, it's funny, and thank God, it's been a great career, and I'm very fortunate. I'm humbled by all this, believe me, because it freaks me out when I get to say this, when I say the words, that I got to play with two of my favorite people in music ever, Peter Criss and Ace Frehley. As a huge diehard Kiss fan from growing up, if you were to tell me 25, 30 years ago that I'd be playing with Peter Criss and Ace Frehley and singing a Kiss song with these guys, there's no way I ever would have thought that. But that's what happened, and it was just one of the, you know, we've been fortunate enough to play Yankee Stadium, all these big shows, all these great things in our lives, and that is easily one of the highlights of my life, just jamming with those guys and just that feeling. And Scott Ian and I just looked at each other, and all of a sudden, I think we were just 13-year-old kids and just looked at each other, what the fuck? You know, we just looked at each other like, oh my God. It was that oh my God moment that this was really happening. It was amazing.
It's very cool. Well, I hope that they actually release a full video of that show, because there looked like there was a lot of cool performances there.
Oh, dude, there were so many great jams. There were so many. You know, the Winery Dogs played that night. You know, Portnoy and all my buddies, Billy, and there's just so many good jams that went on the night. I wish a lot of people got to see that, because it was a special, special night. It really was.
Well, and you mentioned the Winery Dogs. For those of you listening, in 2 weeks, on the 18th, we're actually having Richie Kotzen in studio, and he's going to bring his guitar. So we'll have him for an hour. So we'll have some definitely Winery Dogs stuff going on there, solo record, all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah, so. Richie's got it all, man. He could play. He's always been great. You know, he's a great vocalist, great guitar player. You know, he's a great writer. He's got the package, so he's a good dude too.
So let's get back to Among the Living album. Was it co-produced or fully produced by Eddie Kramer?
It was produced by Eddie Kramer. But you know what happens when you're in a band? You the band is hovering over you, and yeah, you put the Eddie Kramer. It was Eddie Kramer and Anthrax, but I think it says that on the, I haven't seen that record in a good long time. I think it should, if it didn't say Eddie Kramer and Anthrax, because we were right in the thick of it.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's why I was trying to remember. I thought it said both of you. So how was that working with him? I mean, that, you know, Anthrax music is totally different than something like a Hendrix that he's made his name with. How did he?
Absolutely.
What did he do that, you know, kind of maybe changed you guys or didn't?
Well, it's funny. You know, I saw Eddie a couple of months ago at some party in L.A. and we're talking about the whole recording thing with Among the Living, and you know, coming into it, he's got this big resume, which is amazing. You know, I mean, it's Hendrix, it's Zeppelin, all this great stuff. And you kind of want to just see, all right, you think, what is he going to do with us? Because we had these songs. And you kind of got to trust that, but you know, but then again, you also have to be true to yourself. So it was a trust factor, but also I think we had to come in and say, all right, we're going this way. This is the way we want to go. I think we had to direct it a little more, but absolutely, as far as bass goes, Eddie helped me a lot, tone-wise. I mean, he heard me getting drowned out with my sound, and we just decided right there it has to cut through the middle with the bass tone, because you have the Scott Ian heavy guitars that are really thick, and Charlie Benanti, my drummer, with the kick drums that are going to be pounding, so where am I? It's going to be mushy, and unless you have this tone that cuts through and is biting without losing the bottom. So, I mean, we really worked on that. I mean, worked on hard, too.
And you can definitely, I mean, you can hear, well, you'll hear it, because actually at the end of the show we'll close it out with about a minute worth of I Am the Law from that album. So
cool.
you'll hear your sound there. But, I mean, you can hear it in the three songs we played before, how you just come through. I mean, that, again, it's just like you're just vibrating the whole bass. Very cool.
Yeah, that's the idea. Thank you. It's for me, it's always been about it's yes, of course, the playing first, but the tone. I mean, if you're not going to be heard, it should add to the song. The sound of your bass should complement the guitars and the drums. It should be part of the song, and that's all. I'm still chasing it. Believe me, I want to get better every time, and it's something that I'll always do. I'll always try to get there.
Now, do you use any pedals besides your the Hart Key amps? Do you add anything with pedals?
You know, it's funny you should mention that. I just like making ridiculous noises, especially as I get older. I don't know. It's weird. Maybe I have some kind of mating ritual with sounds I have to get out. But I'm using this Green Rhino. You ever hear of a Green Rhino?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's an overdrive. This is one of my. I heard this at a clinic. Some dude at the clinic at one of my clinics. Show me it, and I tried this thing, man. It was love, man. I got it on the spot. I said, I need this. I put money on it. I got it, and I've been using TC Electronics this Flashback.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, like a delay pedal. Yeah,
delay pedal. And I've been really this whole week. I can't believe my neighbors haven't called the cops on me, just because it's been so. I'm telling you, the other night it sounded like elephant sounds coming out. I just want to, you know. Just to experiment. I just like experimenting and see what I'm going to be using, what I can, what I can't. And the other night, it was so loud. My wife was upstairs and goes, are you going to be loud like that all night? You know, it was just fun, man. I just like having a blast with this stuff. That's what I do at nighttime. If 3 a.m. comes up, it's my time.
Now, with a delay pedal, with thrash metal, how do you set the delay pedal? I mean, have you figured out what you're going to do with that, or are you timing it so it's...
No, that's the fun of it all, seeing where it could, you know, with Anthrax specifically, these are very structured songs. When we write with this structured, if there's a part for bass, I'll try to put in any pedal, but a lot of the times it gets drowned out. You won't even, this song's in Anthrax in our records, that there are pedals being used, but it gets drowned out. It's straight out from either the drums or the guitars or just the ambience. There are pedals for sure. I mean, God, I remember one of the records. I forgot. Gosh, you know this, but this is not an exit. I actually use a 12-string bass on this, and you can't even hear the overtones of the 12-string bass just because the ambience and the drums and the guitars just kind of like, you know, it just presses it down.
Are you at all into vintage basses at all?
Yes, but. My problem is getting them stolen. getting them stolen. Whenever I have a good bass that gets up there in age, somehow somebody gets taken away somehow. So I've lost a few really good vintage basses, some Fenders that I've had in storage, and some inside jobs. Long story short, you know, sob, sob, sob. They're gone.
Yeah, I think actually I saw. I think I saw. I don't know if it was a YouTube thing or something about Scott Ian about a guitar he had that he ended up seeing being sold on eBay. He's like, wait a minute, How the hell did you even get that? You know. But
it's amazing just what happens with these guitars. I get it. I understand the value, but it's so scary now to even, you know, I love bass. I mean, when I say I love bass, every day I love more and more of what I, there's so much more to learn. There's really so much more to learn. I mean, I daily go to YouTube and just try to learn more bass. So I understand those vintage basses that have those sweet necks on them. It's just, I need to do more of that. I need to get more of them.
Well, Frank, thank you very much for calling in, and we definitely would love to have you back on. We'd love to have, we'd love to have you in the studio at some point and have you play some stuff live for us.
I would love to.
If you're ever in Los Angeles area.
We will do that. Where are you guys located anyway?
We're
in the Valley.
In the Valley, yeah, Sherman Oaks area.
No, I'll go to the Galleria first, and I'll come over and hang out.
There you go.
That sounds good.
Oh, my God.
Well, you can learn more about Frank's group, Anthrax, by going to anthrax.com. Do you have your own website? I think you do, don't you?
Yeah, it's called thefrankbello.com.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Thank you for that. And Twitter is @thefrankbello.
Yep. And so, again, we want to thank the folks at Harkey for hooking us up with Frank and David.
And Mark Harkey for being in the chat room with
us. Yeah, and giving you a little harassment there. we definitely want to thank our sponsors, Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio, and Guitar Hummer at guitarhummer.com. Definitely check them out. And mention, the Flow Guitars. Help us out, too.
Yeah.
So with that being, we'll thank everybody again. And next week we have, who do we have?
Next week is Dan Boole.
From 65 Amps, that's right, with Tony Conley.
Tony Conley, and they're going to talk about the history of rock.
So that'll be very cool.
That's always fun.
Yeah, Dan's got some interesting theories about Miley Cyrus, so you'll have to listen to that. He'll probably get into it. Anyhow,
I think we all have some interesting theories on Miley Cyrus. Okay.
We're just waiting for the interesting videos. Anyways, sorry about that. So let's leave with a killer first minute of I Am the Law from Among the Living album. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, man. Take care of yourself.